Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Good to hear you. Your voice sounds good coming down from the mountain there. Makes you something of the prophet in our duo here. You're always proclaiming from the mountain, and I'm here in the lowly plain down in Florida.
Well, you know, the Gospels, one, the sermon was on the mountain, the other was on the plain.
You have to have, see, there's the Bible saying, see, there's different styles for different congregations or something.
There you go.
Well, we're going to talk some text today. Think about preaching as we come now to the final Sunday in our church year. And we're wrapping up year B on this Sunday known as the Reign of Christ or the Sunday of Christ the King. We may use those terms interchangeably, but great text today, wonderful gospel text. I've always enjoyed this little encounter from John's gospel between Pilate and Jesus. So are you a king? Well, are you saying I'm one? Well, why would I say that? Well, I don't know. There's good stuff in here. Text from Revelation, the Psalm, and a little bit from Daniel, the Old Testament apocalypse. So, what are you thinking today? I don't know if you want to set the tone for us a little bit, but lead us on as we think about worship for this coming Sunday. By the way, these are the texts for November the 25th, 2018.
Well, Christ the King Sunday is a late addition to the liturgical calendar. It's a 20th century tradition. It's not 100 years old. It was started by the Pope in the 1920s as a reaction. It was post-World War I, the Great War, the war to end all wars, and Christian Europe had just sort of tried to blow itself up, which was bad enough. You know, you had Christians on almost everybody was nominally Christian on both sides,
right,
except throw in the Turks were not, you know, but you know what I'm saying.
Sure.
And then in the 1920s, he looks around and, you know, you've got the rise of Russia and Russian nationalism tied with communism, other nationalist groups, Mussolini's coming along, and a kind of rise of the strong person. And this was kind of a reminder post-war that, you know, this is where all this got us. This loyalty to the particular country and a primary loyalty to a particular leader. And it was, remember, whatever else is going on at the secular level, Christ is the ultimate king. And that was the way in which this was. So it was very much a Roman Catholic observance for a long time. It began to become a part of the lectionary observance, the church year observance of Protestants, mostly, I think, post Vatican II, as we began to mesh Roman Catholic and Episcopal and Lutheran kind of calenders, and then Methodist and others, you know, began to change. Christ the King began to shift a little bit. And what are we talking about here? One of the things is it's kind of coming to the, what we talked about last week, in the end, God, you know, this week we've got the book of Revelation. One of the things in the beginning, God in Genesis, and kind of we end the church year with a kind of whatever else happens in the end is God. And this, you know, and it is echoes of the lines in the Nicene Creed and the Apostles' Creed, he shall come again to judge the living and the dead. That's kind of a worship and theological context. So the text are picked to talk about issues of how Christ is a king, and also what does that kingship entail, what does it look like, et cetera, et cetera, as we come to the end, the ultimate moment of life, and how do we embrace the ultimate when we always are standing in the penultimate, the next to last. We are in the already but not yet kingdom, and this text reminds, these texts in this day is to remind us of the ultimate kingdom. So that's what we're looking at. So
cool.
I think I'd like to walk through the text now that I've kind of set up this is what the day is about. They're all today, which usually happens on a festival day. This is a festival day. All the text, including the epistle lesson, the second lesson, are tied to the theme of the day. And the theme of the day is, what does it mean for Christ to be a king?
The reign of Christ, absolutely. I'll offer one brief moment, and I realize most of our listeners are pretty acquainted already with lectionary. But as one who's, I still consider myself a relative newcomer, and I know as I was coming to the lectionary, coming to the church here, it was not a tradition I grew up in. And you can probably remember the days, Delmer, with a chuckle or two. I just was trying to wrap my head around all this stuff. What in the world's going on? And I remember when it dawned on me that when you talk about the church year, that one of the most helpful images was, this is when the church begins again telling the story. And we tell the story of Christ. And, you know, I could get the beginning with Advent and then into Christmas and baptism and Epiphany and so on and so on and so forth. And then to bring that up and we come back around, the ending of the church year looks toward the ending, right? Yep. And I think you've said it well. I really like that. In the beginning, God, and at the end, God, and we who are the church, we see that through this vision of the reign of Christ. I don't know that maybe that's helpful to sort of drop that in any of congregations, if there are any of you that maybe you have members like me still going, what? I don't get all this stuff. Why do we all, we don't have kings anymore. We don't have, hey, it's a powerful image.
One of the sermons, ways I've started sermons with this, and you know, it's one of those that rolls over around every year, is you know, why do we call Elvis a king? Mm-hmm. You know, and we start talking about, well, we don't deal with kings, you know, and what we hear about the only royalty we pay much attention to, the British royalty, a lot of it we're not all thrilled about, you know, right. And so then we do. We got Burger King. We got Elvis the King, and it's usually think about it in the Las Vegas, the Elvis, you know, the jumpsuit and the flipped hair, and then you drive into almost any town, you can find a guy selling cheap mattresses. He's the Mattress King. So how does that image that we use? Most and king size, the biggest bed. We don't even know why we call it a king size.
Yeah.
How does that image match up with Jesus? What are we saying about our Lord by the use of this language? That's the key question today. And I think one of the important things to remember about preaching is we're always trying to, in one way or another, answer the question that Jesus posed Peter. Peter said, "Thou art Christ." And Peter said, hey, you know, and Jesus said, well, you know, when he said, "Who do you say that I am?" Mm-hmm. You know, that's the question we're always trying to answer. And then when Peter says, "You are the Christ," and Jesus basically responds, "Yeah, well, what does that mean to you?" Mm-hmm. What we're really working on is answering always every Sunday after Sunday, and this is how the church year is put together, that one question, helping people, as we proclaim, we're trying to help people answer that question, who do you say that Christ is?
Right.
And today, the image of the king tries to get at answering the question, who is the Christ? So you've got Daniel here, which comes from one of the most purely apocalyptic kind of revealings, you know, in the terms of revealing. And it's this imagery from chapter 7. And it's got some wonderful language in here. I love the ancient one, you know, the God who has no beginning and no end. That's a great language. And it has images of throne. None of this is to be taken out of, is literal, you know, hair white as snow, hair of his head, pure will. His throne was fiery flames and his wheels burning fire. And a friend of mine said, sounds like some old guy set himself, his oxygen tank on fire. And they, you know, in a wheelchair, you know. And,
oh, my.
Rafter here. So, you know, for us, really grab. But what it brings this imagery of huge thrones. I think Game of Thrones with their big throne there might help. But it is the most powerful being. And all of that in Teva and 9 and 10 and all these people serving him. It is to be, this is the end of time. This is the creator of the universe. And we come before him. This is a vision. And I love the fact that he talks about, you know, in these night visions in 13. So we have to be really clear. This is a vision and a dream. And dreams are hard to understand exactly what you're seeing, but they bring elements up. The one like a human being. Now, that's an interesting
this
word.
Is where, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is where we get kind of difficult. And I'm going to come back to it in a minute. But he's talking about the one who saw like a human being coming on clouds, presented before the ancient one, and then we get to the kingship, to the one like a human being, given dominion and glory and kingship. And then it's just, oh, it's great language. All peoples, nations, languages serve him, dominions everlasting, won't pass away, etc. Wow, that sounds like something we've heard before.
Uh-huh.
So the question becomes, whatever it meant then, what was he talking about? How are these to be interpreted? They are dreams. They are visions. So how are we to interpret? Well, some people interpret this as symbolic, that the one like a human being is the nation of Israel or a remnant. That's symbolic. Secondly, a lot of people think of it as a particular person or being. Some say Michael, some said Gabriel, a Davidic king, the ultimate Messiah. This Daniel was probably written in the time of Judas Maccabeus about using the time of the exile to set up some themes. It could be they were referring to Judas Maccabeus and saying he will win in that big event. And of course, the early Christians look at Jesus and they say, look, this is the fulfillment of prophecy. How often in the Gospels do we see, and he took them aside and explained to them from the scriptures. Those are the kind of things that were being used to say, this is who I am as the Messiah. Now, like any good Lutheran pastor, I'm going to say, who am I to say?
But who am I to say?
On the other hand, I think one needs to honor the integrity of the Hebrew scriptures and say they weren't directly predicting the man named Jesus born in Nazareth, et cetera, the writer Daniel. But I don't think it's illegitimate for Christians to look at this and look at the life of Jesus and add two and two and get a theological four. And that's what that language is about. And that's why it's in this text, that God has said at the end of time, all will be, you know, yeah. Christ will be the king of all this and all will be subject.
Well, I do think it's important without launching into a lecture. Again, this is part of what we need to do as preachers, our work in the study. Yeah. We need to have a clear grasp on what apocalyptic literature, apocalyptic language is. It is always intended to communicate something that is beyond words. It is always using these kinds of fantastical images. It is not to be literalized. You start trying to literalize this and you get your wonderful image. Oh, man.
The old guy in a nursing home who set his oxygen tin on fire and he's trying to get away in his wheelchair.
So I think, you know, you say, wow, something big is happening here. I mean, this message is to get our attention. This message is saying to a people who were in a time when times were tough, in a time when they were marginalized. Look, there's one that's going to be more powerful than us. And John of Patmos makes great use of this passage from Daniel in the book of Revelation, and it serves a similar function when you come there. So yeah, all of these are valid. Don't feel like this is a passage you've got to be able to explain to the nth degree.
Well, yeah, this being Christ the King, I would use this in a kind of illustrative way, you know, of saying the image, a building image of, look here in Daniel, they're looking forward. There is what MLK said, the arc of the universe turns toward justice. So this is part of that arc. Years before Christ, people are looking at God is going to bring an ultimate end that is just. And this is going to work through human agency. That's the other thing. So you start saying, this is what they were anticipating. Then you go to Psalms and you look at that and you say, the Lord is the King. He's robed in majesty, et cetera. The throne is established of old, et cetera. And this ties in with this in the sense that Christians are saying, when the Jews are saying the Lord, they're referring to God. And Christians call Jesus the Lord. There's this connectivity. And who is the King and the King? So there's this connectivity of God and kingship and rule that is ultimate there. And then as we read the text in the lectionary, we come next to Revelation, who ties back beautifully to what was in Daniel. And one of the things to remember is all through the writings in the New Testament, almost without exception, when they refer to the scriptures, they're not referring to the New Testament. They're referring to Hebrew scriptures. That's what they think of as scripture. The other stuff is letters and they're stories about Jesus. But when Revelation was written, there were some other things, but he may not have, who knows what the writer of Revelation had seen, but he knew Daniel and he knew the Psalms and he knew Hebrew scriptures. 1:7 in Revelation, for example, he is coming on the clouds, goes all the way back to 7:13. Oh, is one like a human being coming with the clouds. Now, that's not meant to be a literal floating down out of the clouds. That has to do with the universe.
Were those cumulonimbus or cirrostratus?
Yes. It's not literal. It's an image. Yeah. It's an image that says from beyond. And that language there of every eye seeing him, and even those who pierced him, and on his account all the tribes of the earth will wail. That harkens back to 7:14 about everyone. It's that all and that inclusive. That wailing is not wailing in fear. That's wailing in mourning. Even those who pierced him will realize their mistake and will mourn and will be sorry for what he suffered and will recognize their salvation. And I love the twice in this text. It has that great image of who is and who was and who is to come. And that's that ancient one, and it ties it in with Christ. It's all this wonderful kind of beginning imagery of reminding us of that connection. Now, actually, in this text, you've got a little bit of a Trinitarian formula, though it's not fleshed out. We're going to remember, it took them several hundred years to start fleshing that out, because you've got grace, you, and peace from him who is and was and who is to come, God the Father, from the seven spirits who are before his throne. Let's see, how many gifts of the Spirit are there? There were seven. So this is kind of trying to figure out the Holy Spirit, and from Jesus Christ, the Messiah, the Christ, the faithful witness, the firstborn of the dead, the ruler of the kings of the earth. That goes back up to where he's given him dominion. And to him who loves us and freed us from sins by his blood. He's beginning to work. So there's a trend. And then it's, and six, here we are, made us to be a kingdom. Mm-hmm. And a priest to serve. So we've got this wonderful lesson that ties those two together. That would, you could really just read the pilot text about a Jesus dialogue, but really build a story this day, mm-hmm. a sermon this day. Daniel and Revelation about what does it mean for Christ to be a king.
That's it.
I think you begin a sermon on this by kind of playing with, we have a hard time understanding what the king is. So let's talk about how Israel saw a king and how the ancients saw a king. You might want to tie in, and might be a way in to get the gospel in there, because most people figure if you're going to read the gospel, you ought to say something about it. That wonderful line, "My kingdom is not from this world." And we can start with, well, we don't know what a king is. We're all unfamiliar with kings, you know. And that was our problem in trying to think about Jesus as a king. But Pilate had a different problem. He knew what a king looked like. Brutal, powerful men with armies. Who is this guy?
You're a king?
You a king.
What?
And so at that point, he's wondering how Jesus can be a king. We're wondering the same thing, but from a different angle. Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about what a king is. And then you can do a little bit of what a king in that time and what they were saying about that, how Israel believed a king should be.
Right.
And how Jesus was fulfilling that. And the end of that would then be, well, what does that mean for us? You know, the what and so what. And the so what comes all the way back to Revelation, to be a kingdom priest serving his God and Father. And serving God is serving the neighbor. How does that tie together in the now? Is we hold on for the future, and we serve in the meantime. Don't lose hope.
I think that's a great implication. If we worship Jesus as king, king over the other kings, king of kings, to have a king implies that the king has a kingdom.
Yep.
And so who are we as subjects of this king? And what, you know, that is another way to play with it. What does it mean for us then to be the kingdom and have the king, a king who lives in us and through us and is always with us? Which is another thing, this title in Revelation that you pointed out comes out twice. And we almost stumble reading it because we are used to the formula who was and is to come. That makes sense to us. But notice how significant it is that from the one who is and who was and who is to come. It's an it's an eternal reach, if you will, in sort of both directions. But where does it begin? The one who is. Who is this king? It's the one who is with us, is with us. And certainly for Revelation, that was a significant message all throughout. These churches were under high persecution from Domitian, the emperor in Rome at that time. And to have a message that begins with this Ancient of Days, this symbol that many of them knew from the book of Daniel, and to say, hey, this is the one who is and who was and who is to come, and all at the same time. That's what excites my quantum possibility thinking here. What a God, all right, and what a king, is and was and is to come, all at the same time. But I like your approach. Why not just lean into this? You know, we're not sure much what is king. We're Pilate. You're a king. What does that mean? Yeah. And then use the images in these various passages to sort of work through what that means for us. That's exactly what an apocalyptic story would have done. It's kind of like, have you ever been to a movie? And it's happened to me sometimes with a novel, but more often to a movie. And one of those movies where you go and you come out and you just go, wow, I got to think about that.
Yeah,
I got to. You know, and you want to go and you don't kind of process it because you just can't take it all in at once. To me, any powerful story or powerful piece of art or powerful experience, you have to kind of go and think about it and you have to get it situated. That's what these apocalyptic visions and their descriptions were given to do. This is a great occasion to say, let's just walk through this. Let's just think about it.
Think about the various implications. So one of the things that came to me while you were talking about the is and the was and is to come, the God who is, and this is one of those clever three-point things that you may want to use or not. I have done it before. Because, you know, and it's we're post-Thanksgiving. Black Friday just went by. People are starting to think about Christmas presents. Mm. You can talk about, you know, you can sort of entree with that. But here's one of the things. It's in the present tense is where he starts. God is.
Right here. God is.
It's not God, you know, if God were alive today, how upset God would be. He would be, you know, God is.
God is.
So you talk about the God is, and that implies that God is present. If God is, then God is present. No matter this part of the message today is wherever we are and whatever's going on, God is present. And then it talks about the one who died for us and saved us from our sins by his blood. God is a present. A gift from God. If you can't think of anything else, there's a three-pointer won't forget.
If you feel like you've done it all, here's one for you. Well, I'll tell you the one that struck
me. Yeah, and I think it's not bad. The present.
It's not bad.
He's present. He's not past. And he is currently with us. And he will be again. And he is a present. Yeah.
Well, we talk about in our workshops, and when we talk about preaching, there's this part of the process where you need to just let every idea that can come. Don't rule any of them out. There's going to be a lot of stuff that ends up, as it were, on the cutting room floor. Most of it probably should.
Are you saying anything about my presence?
Well, no, I'm fixing. I'm getting ready to throw mine out, and I'm not sure whether this. I'm going to be. I'm going to expose myself here and say, go ahead and think of all these things. I was reading this gospel text, and Jesus, again, I'm intrigued by the dialogue with Pilate. I would be interested sometime in just working with that. It's almost like a stand-up comedy routine. But here's the line that intrigues me in verse 36. If my kingdom were from this world, my followers would be fighting to keep me from being handed over to the Jews. But as it is, my kingdom is not from here. And immediately jumped into my mind, well, you're not from around here, are you? So, I mean, that might be a way into the text. It sounds silly, but you never know. Go ahead in your work. Put stuff like that down. I don't rule anything out when I'm thinking through a text. When I get an idea, you're not from around here, are you? I've heard that all my life. Well, I might end up using that. Probably not. So, the one who is present, the one who is a present. I mean, you just let this stuff flow. Because if you pounce on the first idea you get, it may be pretty good. It may be pretty good. But you're cutting yourself short. You may get to something if you stick with it a little longer. And go ahead and take your time in your preparation. We understand, Bubba. Things get busy when you're a pastor, and you've got a couple of funerals, you got holiday stuff coming up, you got the blessing of the Thanksgiving turkeys or whatever. I know there's a lot of stuff to do, but week in and week out, give your study time. Well, and let the ideas flow.
Well, you mentioned 836, and I really did. I based the one I wrote this week on My Kingdom is Not from This World. Mm-hmm. It's not from here. And I got thinking about living in two worlds.
Yeah.
You know, and I grew up on the North Carolina, Virginia state line, and the farm was in both. My house was in one. My grandparents were in the other. We went to church in one state. We went to school in another. And all of that was confusing enough. And then I can't remember which state did daylight saving time. I think North Carolina did daylight saving time and Virginia didn't. So half the year we were on different times, you know, and people, you've lived on the edge of time zones, but it was insane. And you're like, in old time, new time, when are we doing this? We'd show up at church at the wrong time. And one of my parents worked in Virginia and the other in North Carolina. It was crazy.
Son, go get your dad and tell him it's time for supper. No, he said he's got another hour to work.
That's right. Well, one of the things that happens with that, when Jesus, and those kind of dialogues, that's what's happening with Jesus And Pilate is, Jesus is talking about one thing and Pilate's talking about another because they're in two overlapping worlds. And that's an entree into talking about how, as Christians, we live in two overlapping worlds. You can, and there are a lot of those overlaps. There's church and state, there's natural, supernatural, there's spiritual and earthly. And the trick for Christians is to not be so obsessed with one that we forget the other.
Right.
And that's what Jesus modeled this for us. You know, the Nicene Creed came down from heaven for us and for our salvation. You know, the whole imagery that we're leading into with Advent and Christmas, and may as well acknowledge where people we're preaching to's heads are going to be. This is what happened in Christmas. He came, the King of the universe came, and is coming into this world to be a king, you know, to live in this world in both, and invites us to recognize we're a citizen of two worlds that overlap and get confusing. And we sometimes, to a humorous level, with the struggle to live in both worlds at the same time. We don't want to be what Johnny Cash calls so heavenly minded, we're no earthly good. But we don't want to be so earthly centered that we don't see the stars.
You got it.
Yeah.
Well, Bubba, we've wandered around in it pretty good today.
We sure wish the best for all of you as you prepare to stand and deliver. Not much left for us to do today, Bubba, other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Lock and Key by Silent Partner. We go out this session with a song by the late, great Roy Clark. This is Thank God and Greyhound, You're Gone, written by Ed Nix and Larry Kingston, performed by Roy Clark.
But I thought I loved you, and I hoped you would change. So I gritted my teeth and didn't complain. Now you come to me with a simple goodbye. You tell me you're leaving, but you don't tell me why. Now we're here at the station and you're getting on, and all I can think of is thank God and Greyhound you're gone. Thank God and Greyhound you're gone. I didn't know how much longer I could go on, watching you take the respect out of me, watching you make a total wreck out of me. That big diesel motor is playing my song. Thank God and Greyhound you're gone. Thank God and Greyhound you're gone. That load on my mind got lighter when you got on. That shiny old bus is a beautiful sight, but the black smoke rolling up around the taillights, it may sound kind of cruel, but I've been silent too long. Thank God in Greyhound.